You're listening to The Big Cast, your source for the latest in financial technology. Brought to you weekly by the Best Innovation Group with your hosts, John Best and Glenn Cervati.
Welcome to another edition of The Big Cast. My name is Glenn Cervati on behalf of the Best Innovation Group, where we love to do cool things with financial technology. And let me check the line right now. Producer, do we have a connection? Can we manage to bring in via satellite here? Do I have you, John?
Oh, hey, I hear him. I hear Glenn.
All the way from
here, Glenn. Is that Glenn or a shoe?
All the way from the Ukraine. No, you're not in the Ukraine, but you are in the wild.
No, close. I'm in a parking lot in Florida.
Very similar.
But I'm in a cool parking lot in Florida because you know what I stumbled across?
The lengths you will go to for a scoop for the Big Cast.
You're looking at drones. I'm next to a company called DroneUp, which is right now frantically packing up as fast as they can because we're about to get a big storm. These guys were testing out delivery for Walmart. And I actually have an interview with them. I was able to get their attention. I watched a drone launch. I have video, so I'm going to share some of that, I guess. And once I get it a little bit cut together, because it's kind of stop and start, and you know they're trying to follow all their FAA rules, and I'm poking around their drone. It was pretty amazing. I just happened to be over here. I'm actually in Florida, and God, we have been trying to get this podcast done for 5 days.
I can't catch a break. Just giving people a little bit of a sneak peek inside the makings of this. Well, you mentioned the storm coming. I think between weather effects and obviously you're supposed to be on vacation right now, taking a sabbatical and spending some well-deserved time with family. And as you mentioned, that's been even a bigger demand on your time there than you expected. But glad we managed.
Well, my alma mater's here. As you know, I in terms of my career, I started off here in Florida at Suncoast Credit Union, which is a huge and fabulous credit union here in all up and down the west coast of Florida, run very well for many years by a good friend, Tom Doherty, and now run by one of my very close friends, Kevin Johnson, who's the CEO, who, they just crossed 10 billion. Now they're closing in on 20. Just an amazing organization. And, I was there for a while and just, we have lots of friends here and family and, lived here for quite a bit. So I was able to go out and I know you're a music guy. I was able to go out and watch Ed Gonzalez, who is our chief operating officer, go and play in his band at a restaurant that he told me was owned by Gene Simmons called Rockin' Brews.
It all comes together.
Yeah, so I went and chatted with him. But anyways.
And we're also, you're actually connecting via Starlink, Elon Musk's satellite.
Yeah, I got good things to say about this Starlink thing. My God, where have you been all my life, Starlink? Now, I may not be a big fan of what he's doing with Twitter. To be fair, Twitter, whatever. But I know it's been an important thing, but this is a game changer for folks who are, you talk about, and it's funny because I always sort of equate this, but, with this, this really seals the deal to work from anywhere I want,
Not quite from what you told me, because as you said, I know you're spending some time, you drove an RV down there and you mentioned, I didn't know exactly what you meant, that you tend to pick shady locations to park.
Yeah, they're not shady in terms of drug deals, but shady in terms of my wife likes to pick a spot where there's lots of trees because it's nice to be in the shade, especially in Florida. Problem is that for the satellite dish you need an unobstructed view, and so fortunately it comes with a really long cable, but I wasn't able to find a spot that was completely unobstructed, so it every now and then blips out for actual audio streaming. Now But as far as like using it, playing video games, streaming Netflix, stuff you could never do with a typical, RV site's Wi-Fi, because you're competing with everybody else in the place.
Right.
There's just no way. And with this, you're golden, and it's super simple to set up. I think if I had a little more wide open view, where I wasn't obstructed for, and it also just so happens on where I am for the satellites, because I've seen at least five other people in the park with them, but they got them way more in the wide open than I do. So,
and hence,
live and
hence
learn,
the,
it's my first time using it.
Hence the Walmart parking lot, and hence the opportunity to track down the drone operation, which sounds like you got enough that we'll make that into a separate episode come the new year, right?
I do. I think you and I are going to talk about this, and maybe I'll reach out to these drone up guys and get them on the show, because this changes a lot of things. And, you know, one of the things as I was watching this, and I know everybody's going to go, John, you're flipping crazy. And I am. But I watched them drop this thing down, and then they delivered the package. Now, the only thing that didn't happen was the payment, because that happened previous to that, right? I bought something online. The way it's supposed to work is it can only deliver up to 10 pounds right now. But I bought something, you know, so theoretically, I would buy something online. They would bring it out. They're building a launch facility in all their parking lots, from what these guys told me, like a little tower of drones. So I guess a little golf cart or something brings out what you bought. And then they put it in what looked like a, it looked like the same kind of box that you would get full of munchkins at Dunkin' Donuts.
yeah, because it's got the loop on the handle, right?
Yeah, it's got the little handle thing. And then, but you know what I was thinking is, let's say that you had something pretty common. And you know, one of the things I've always talked about that people think I'm crazy for, but this will happen, is eventually you're going to have drones that are going to cruise over, say, an event, you know, high, way high in the air. And maybe they're balloons or something, you know, you can make it a little easier. But either way, a flying device, and you're going to order a pizza, and you're going to pay for the pizza via the drone. And then that thing's going to drop down to you. And I was thinking a pizza box looks an awful like a drone if you put four propellers on it. But, you know, you're going to be able to get things. You're not only going to be able to buy things from a store, but think about like no footprint at all. What if you just had a bunch of drones flying around that you could give payment to, and they would drop things off to you?
This is, we're bleeding into next, you know, our predictions episode here too. But yeah, let's look. It makes sense.
All right.
It makes sense to me. But we're together. Let's get to the top
stories of 2022.
Yeah, we're looking.
Which, by the way, I have a great segue for one of my top stories. I have a great segue.
All right.
So when Russia invaded the Ukraine, which is a top story for 2022, it cannot be. Speaking of drones, that was one part of it. But the other thing that Elon Musk famously did was he made sure that the Ukraine still had the internet, because that was one of the first things you try to knock out providing the Ukraine with Starlink for free, I believe.
I had forgotten about that. That is a good call.
Yeah. That story we're still feeling the repercussions of, and who knows how it ends playing out. But, you know, it's funny that we talk about a lot of the supply chain issues, but it certainly has, you know, you don't realize how much of certain things come from certain places. Apparently wheat, you know, all the gluten apparently comes from Ukraine, I guess.
I wasn't aware of that until this whole story broke. I mean, I knew that was a breadbasket for Europe, but not to the extent that it is.
And you have heritage in that area. Yeah. You have heritage, and you have a much more emotional connection with that as well. You know, even though I grew up there, not quite in Ukraine, but in Europe. I think you can't overlook that. You can't overstate that as the top story for the ripple effects, particularly in fintech and in finance, that it's had.
And I'll add, I mean, just to kind of build off of that, one of the things that was on my list that you've kind of already addressed now, but the role, because I try to tie it all back to fintech and payment systems, you know, the role that payments played in politics, because one of the things that happened again, along with Elon making Starlink available, was they being the SWIFT network, the global banking community, cut Russia off from the SWIFT network, which is the primary way to make global payments.
Crazy to think about, because, you know, I mean, there were people, there were companies there like McDonald's or whatever that, you know, I'm thinking would have had to pay, you know, the local people that deliver their food and all of these things, you know?
It was a pretty controversial move. And I thought it was kind of interesting because nobody outside of a very, very tight community of payments geeks had ever heard of the SWIFT network. And suddenly it was like, you know, being bandied about as like kind of normal terminology there for a couple months. I think now people are right back to not remembering what the SWIFT network was, but that just shows how everything ties together. And then also
VocaLink too, right? It was both.
Yeah, exactly. They pretty much got cut off. And as they said, that just creates, you know, necessity being the mother of invention.
Well, and that's when they started demanding everything be paid in rubles.
And they started really building out their own robust. They already had a network that was considered to be very rudimentary, but because they had no other alternative, they started building that out, kind of like the way.
Ah, but there was an alternative.
Okay, we're going to go there too. But let me just mention before that, with the payment systems, the other one that came up was the special merchant code that was being applied now to gun sales in the U.S., which was also a major form of controversy. Which, you know, doesn't seem to have caused quite as much noise as it did in the early stages. I think that one's still playing out, but another example of payments intersecting with politics. Another way to pay.
Anything, you know, I've often said, you don't have to blow up our electricity. You don't have to blow up our, you know, our generators or lock out our hospitals. Just kill our ability to do over-the-counter payments and watch us crash and burn.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that would cripple this country as fast as anything else. Just the inability, if you were to just take out, you know, some networks, you know, big networks that would cause that. Just think of the day's loss you would get, you know, just from that sort of thing. So yeah, it's always going to have that sort of intersection, and that's why payments are considered critical infrastructure.
And that's where you get back to that point of, you know, do you want to become totally reliant on electronic payments? Is cash maybe very analog, but it's still a pretty darn good backup. It wasn't this year. I'm not even sure it was even 21. I forget what year it was when the ATMs all fritzed and the payment systems did as well in the UK, right at happy hour on a Friday afternoon, and there was mass hysteria because people couldn't go to the pub. So,
I think it was in 2012, Korea, South Korea, was hit with a hack that was like freaking movie style. All the ATMs went out at once. A lot of computers popped up with like a freaking ASCII art skull, like just craziness.
Wasn't that around the time the movie The Conversation was coming out? The one that North Korea.
Yes.
Like?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That they didn't want them to produce. And then, right around that same time, the biggest oil conglomerate company in the world, Aramco out of Saudi Arabia, they were hacked. And imagine that, like, you worked for, I don't know, some huge company somewhere where they had at least 30,000 employees or 30,000 computers, and every one of those computers was wiped all at once.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that was called Shamoon was the name of that virus, if you want to look it up.
Anyway,
that was a long time ago. But in 2022, we've seen more attacks on the critical infrastructure. We've seen attacks here. Someone was driving around shooting up power stuff and managed to take power out in North Carolina and South Carolina for a lot of people.
It's always interesting to me. Those stories, you know, they're real big for a couple of days and then they vanish. I think the power is back on, but I got to believe that, you know,
they were right. I mean, all of those substations aren't guarded. So there were a lot of good stories on that. So that was one. And then the next top story for me was that Ethereum actually completed what they call the merge, which was up until...
In September? Is that around September
time? September, yeah, because up until this point, you know, if you wanted to mine Ethereum or get involved with Ethereum, it was a proof of work platform. For those of you that don't know what that means, it means that you would perform a complex mathematical problem. You would, and like in math, you know, what did your teacher always say in math, Glenn? You got to show your what?
Show your work. Oh, boy.
You got to show your work. And so you would perform this complex mathematical computation and show your work. That proof of work, if you did it fast enough and you were the winner and how long it took to do that, then you would get the right to be the group that processed the payments, you know, for that round on the Ethereum network, and disperse things and ran the smart contracts and all the things that go with it. And the problem with proof of work is the complexity level of those math problems continues to get more and more and more and higher and higher and higher, because you have to do that in order to continue to keep the supply in line. You can't, if it's too easy, then everybody can, you know, mine and run and make this stuff happen. And it was costing bazillions of dollars in power because everybody's running all these really strong and powerful computers. In fact, one computer couldn't do it. You'd have to be part of a whole bunch of people, say thousands, to even get close to accomplishing the math equation. And they converted to proof of stake. And what proof of stake is instead of proving your work, you say, hey, I bought, you know, 100 coins, Ethereum coins or whatever they are, whatever we're going to call them. This is my stake in the network. And based on that stake and some other algorithms that don't involve super high power, you know, processing that costs a lot of money and creates a lot of heat and all the things that go with it, then, you know, you can then perform the same actions as though you won in the proof of work concept. But this was going on for years. They talked about this for like 3 years, and really a lot of people have written it off.
They postponed it multiple times. Right?
Most people didn't think it was ever going to happen, and it did happen. They survived it. Ethereum is still working just fine. It did upset a lot of miners and the folks who were making money off all those. It also, you know, forced those folks to look somewhere else to do something different rather than use those particular, you know, they had to take those really powerful computer systems and turn them at something else. But
I've seen estimates. I assume that you can kind of confirm or deny based on your knowledge that the level of energy consumed by Ethereum literally decreased by more than 99%. Did I hear that correctly? I mean, is it that big?
Yeah, you're exactly. Yeah, it did. Wow. And on top of that, I read a statistic somewhere that said that the world's power consumption went down by like something like 0.03%, which, I mean, that doesn't seem like much, but if you think about one thing, you know, I mean, the only, you know, no, what if you turned all the air conditioners off in Florida all at once, you know? I don't know.
Right, I mean, it's like talking about, you know, the ocean, you know, rose by a centimeter, big deal. Well, no, that is a big deal. Same basic.
Right.
That was
mine. What do you got?
Well, I'll just kind of follow up on that just so we can kind of get it off the table since it's related. You know, the Ethereum merge is talking about Bitcoin. We obviously continue to be in the Bitcoin winter. We also had, you know, inescapably to talk about the FTX situation, which given the extradition process from the Bahamas continues to go on. And then the implosion of other companies that were somewhat related and the contagion effect that happened when all the different crypto pieces kind of started to unravel. So I think you have to talk about those implosions. But I think to me, the other piece, and you and I discussed this on an earlier episode, it doesn't actually alter the underlying technology, the underlying story. These are the overlay exchanges and whatnot that wound up in the, you know, in many ways, it was an attempt to centralize a decentralized currency that wound up creating the issues.
Yep, I agree completely. Well, that plus clearly, you know, a lack of regulation.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
But you know, that's was the whole point of it. So it's hard to, you know, and we've seen this before, right? We've seen this with other platforms where this has happened. You know, there's been other organizations that really caused a big problem. You know, Tether was an issue. There was a lot of around that. But, you know, I'll point this out. And this is, you know, Bitcoin is still $16,000.
I am really amazed by that. I mean, I really, with all the noise, I mean, it was already kind of like bumping around, staying right around hovering just above or below 20,000. With all the stuff that's happened since kind of like mid to late October, I would have thought that the confidence level would have been a much, you know, cause for a much bigger decline. And the fact that it's held at 16 to me is quite surprising.
Well, and yeah, I agree. So, but I do think the FTX story is, and we certainly did a deep dive in that in a previous episode. I'm sure we can post a link to that, but
yeah, we will.
That's definitely a 2022 story.
And I'll add to that, I know you mentioned this earlier, that it was one of yours, and it's one of mine as well, because I think we can tie it together, is inflation. And the reason I'm tying it together is, to me, it was the end of the free money era, as they call it, that is part of what really caused a lot of the house of cards to tumble around a bunch of these players like Voyager and Celsius and BlockFi, because they were paying people you can quote unquote deposit your money with them, and then they would lend it out to somebody else, which was one of the first real uses of DeFi, decentralized finance. But, you know, I think a good number of people either didn't understand that those deposits were not literally insured deposits, or two, just kind of said, yeah, okay, there's risk, but so what? I'm getting 4 or 5% of my money. I can't get more than, 0.1% at a real bank, so I'll run the risk. Well, all of a sudden, when inflation reared its head and people started having other alternatives for their money, and people had a hard time repaying some of those loans, and the price of crypto went down, I think that's when everything started to unravel with this process. But more broadly, inflation, I know you want to talk about as well.
Yeah, I think inflation is the domino that fell, that, because the other big story was the housing market, right?
Mm-hmm.
The housing market was on fire. I'd never seen anything like it for almost a complete year and a half, where like you could make a bid on a house, and if it was on the market for a day or two, that might have been too long, and people were going way above bid and all of those things. And, the rates were great and the market was booming. And now we're, inevitably on the other side of that. The good news is it isn't a 2008 bubble. I think we've seen enough to know that that's not the case. The homes are still maintaining their value, thank God, from what I've seen. But,
If they go down to some extent, I just saw a good cover, a story about this in the Wall Street Journal, kind of covering the details. There's not nearly as many people underwater. The housing prices can go down a fair bit and still be okay. I mean, we'd still
right.
be okay from a 2008 kind of situation.
Yeah. So I think that was a breath of fresh air, and it's certainly something I think everybody was holding their breath on as we watched that market, particularly with credit unions being big players of, in the space of, I think they did a much better job of capturing that mortgage opportunity. They were much more prepared, even down to the smaller credit unions, because of the wonderful job done by QSOs and others to create a better process for that. But the idea that this could be a bubble that could break and then all of those could go bad, it seems to not have been the case. And frankly, it feels like everybody's attempts at the inflation aren't working either, because people are still spending. Weird mode where it feels like some of this stuff just isn't following the protocol that everyone expects.
I agree. But I mean, it hasn't been following the protocol for a while. And I still go back. I think the Fed gets, I think we talked about this earlier too. I think the Fed gets something of a bad rap because, yes, did the money that came into the market with stimulus around trying to keep the economy afloat during COVID, did it wind up creating an inflationary bubble? Yes, it did. There were multiple times we did similar things back in 2008 with the last thing, where the same argument was made. We've put too much money and we're going to have an inflationary bubble. And I believed it, and it didn't happen. But this time we had a whole bunch of different things hitting at once, including what we already talked about, a war in the Ukraine and a supply chain, massive disruption and a pandemic. I mean, everything was hitting at once. And I think, I still don't think we're even close to hitting a level of equilibrium. It does look like, we're starting to see inflation recede a bit, but you make a good point. As long as the labor market's out of kilter, that's not going to go all the way back.
Yeah, you're never going to know. And I don't know that we could measure the labor market accurately with so many contractors and so many different ways of making money and working and the hustles and the side hustles. And
Agreed. I think that, I think a lot of people kind of miss. I have a really hard time getting too worked up about the unemployment rate because it doesn't take into account the denominator. You have to look at the number of people looking for work. And as we know, a whole bunch of people left the workforce, which is one of the reasons we have that challenge. So, the unemployment rate going up, it could easily go up without the number of jobs going down, because more people could just be entering and saying, hey, can you please hire me? And then there's not a job available. Eventually, that'll catch up, and it's going to have to. Like I say, we're out of kilter, and we're going to be out of kilter for a bit longer.
Yep. So what's your next one?
I would go back to, when we talk about startups and a really hot industry around fintech and whatnot, the way it's been worded is, you know, valuations basically came down dramatically. We know that in terms of a lot of companies, but venture capital and the cash that the investments being made in these companies just really stopped flowing. And I think that's true. But one of the things that I think isn't talked about quite as much is there's a ton of money in venture capital that's sitting waiting to be invested right now. And again, I think it's a matter of that equilibrium. A lot of the, you know, the startup founders saw these really, really high valuations for a couple years. And now they're having a hard time getting their heads around the fact that maybe they can't get that kind of money anymore. So I think there's just a meeting of the minds that have to take place. I'm familiar with a couple of different funds that are, you know, literally have a couple $100 million waiting to make investments. And I don't think they're trying to squeeze anybody and get, you know, bargain basement prices. They're just like, no, those prices that were out there back in the early 2001, just they didn't reflect reality. And I'm sorry, if that's what you think your company's worth, you're probably not going to get it. And I think eventually we're going to get back to the point. Also, you take a look at the numbers. Oh my God, the amount of investment just totally collapsed. Well, it did, but you got to go back and look at the longer term. It was also insanely high for a couple of years. I mean, it really, it's not that much lower than what it had been at any point up until about 2019 or 2020. So I think, again, if you don't get past the headlines, I think there's more to the story than you might hear.
Yeah, and I do agree with you. There's just a lot of, like, this, you know, there's a lot of contributing factors that are going to be hard to take into a place. I 100% agree. I think, you know, one of the other things that I thought was, you know, besides the housing market growing like it was, is obviously, you know, we haven't seen this year, you know, buy now, pay later. We all thought that those chickens were going to rest. And I just saw an article that Walmart is getting ready to roll out with CNBC or I forget who it is. But they're going to roll out a buy now, pay later feature, which I felt like they already had, but I guess maybe not. Maybe they're formalizing it. But that was another big story in the beginning of 2022. A lot of folks were looking into that, the companies like Affirm and Klarna and these various things. And it feels like, I don't know, either it's fizzled or maybe it's still a grenade that the pin's been pulled on, but, you know, someone's still holding it or counting the three or whatever. I don't know.
Well, you definitely do have the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau kind of said, hey, you know, the more we look at this, and they actually issued a request for information from a lot of the key players and wanted data. And they said, you know, the more we look at this, this is really credit card lending. At the end of the day, it's not that much different. It's basically a replacement for credit card lending. And therefore, they're sniffing around to put more disclosure requirements, regulations, the number of people who, you know, supposedly it's free, but then you wind up paying a, you know, it's a little bit like overdraft fees, for lack of a better thing to compare it to. You know, it's free until you don't make a payment. And if you're, you know, as we all know, people had larger deposit balances during the COVID situation when they weren't out spending. Now, all of a sudden, there's a better chance that maybe you're not going to have the money in your account when they go in to get the second or third payment. And all of a sudden, you're going to be subject to a fee. And you say, hey, I didn't know that was going to happen. And that's where I think we're seeing more regulation come in. Like a lot of fintech solutions, they've got to be kind of stress tested in a down market. And we're kind of in a different environment now. So we'll kind of see how that plays out. Like a lot of things, like crypto, like cannabis banking, I think, you know, we're at the young stages of an industry.
Wait, did you say Canada's banking?
Isn't it amazing how we haven't talked about that for a while?
Yeah, you're right. I was just thinking, oh, that's weird, but okay.
But I'm just thinking, I mean, these are things that clearly there is a demand for something that looks like buy now, pay later. Does it have to take the exact form it has today? And, you know, if you need it to be regulated, what better shop do you have than a, you know, licensed financial institution, a bank or a credit union that's got that in-house compliance capability to figure out how to make it work? So I think that there, again, it may not look exactly like the product that's in market today, but I think you're going to see something like that. It's at the end of the day, like we've talked about this, it's layaway, it's in consumer installment lending, just with a high-tech kind of
layaway. I told you the story about how my first job at TJ Maxx was running layaway.
I remember that, yes, and I saw you guys.
I used to have to take people's stuff, and I box it all up, and I have to ring it up this certain way, and I get a percentage. And I had to put like stuff in there. And then every day I had to like prune the boxes for people that didn't pay their layaway and put them back. And
well, that, and that's the big difference is today, no one's waiting until they make their last payment before they get it. They get the stuff. I mean, usually it's high margin stuff so that the merchant doesn't, you know, shed.
Hell, not only they get it, but they can have it dropped off by a drone.
Or they can have it picked up by a drone. The drone can come in and grab it back out of your house.
Oh, drone repossession.
Drone repossession. That's a new prediction.
Yes, I like that. I like that a lot. You know, I think those are really the big, you know, did we miss anything?
No, I've been kind of rattling them off. I think we hit them. The one that I think probably belongs almost more on the prediction page, which we'll come back in early in January. We're going to be doing our 2023 predictions with our friends, John Janklius and Ann Legg. Zelle fraud. I mean, there's getting more attention being given to credit push fraud. Zelle is kind of the poster child for that because it's the brand name that everybody knows about. And I've been told, and the Wall Street Journal has reported on this along with a couple other outlets, that the big banks are getting together and before regulation is done to them, they're trying to come up with their own self-regulation to create a process to basically resolve disputes that, you know, when people feel they've been defrauded. It's that very sticky, kind of slippery, sticky and slippery slope. There's a kind of paradoxical, but you got that weird situation where the idea of payments fraud is if someone makes, you know, gets into your account and takes money without approval. The weird part about these is you approved it. You approved it under false pretenses, but you did approve the transaction. And, you know, you get into that question of, it's a slippery slope. If banks have to make whole for that, then how much responsibility does the consumer have to be informed before they, you know, do something they shouldn't? So it's a tough one. But I think we're going to be hearing a lot more about that in the coming year, too.
We do have one big story that we forgot to talk about. We should talk about just for a second. And this is probably worthy of an episode as it unfolds. But some billionaire, last name, Musk, something like that.
The guy that sells satellites in his spare time, right?
Yeah, Starlink guy, bought his favorite social media platform. Apparently, in an effort to randomly dismantle it. We're not sure. I mean...
You realize you're going to be cut off your Starlink at any moment.
You know, I don't know. I think he seems to be, he likes what they call radical candor, from what I can tell. But the fact he bought that, I think you gotta pay attention to that. That is, you know, because, you know, Twitter has been really the genesis for a lot of different things, and that has been a big deal. I think we talked about the Ukraine, but we also didn't talk about, you know, Britain trying to blow itself up with its 5-day which by the way has a big, you know, influence on the market.
And another one is, you know, in his attempt to reinvent Twitter and find a path to profitability, he's looking at, you know, kind of turning it into a super app, including payments capability. So you bring it back.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And meanwhile, WhatsApp is trying to add payments capability. I just read that somewhere just the other day. So that's pretty amazing. And we ended the year by, you know, saying, hey, we're going to be able to create nuclear fission. And
that
more
was pretty cool. I still remember that false start on cold fusion. Jeez, what was that now? 35 years ago? It made the headlines. It was like, oops, and it didn't hold up to, you know, scrutiny among the scientific community. But here we go. I think we may have it.
Yeah. Oh, and Kroger got Albertsons, which creates, I don't even know if there is another grocery store other than Publix.
That's it. Like, we're down to two, duopoly.
I mean, yeah, I think we're down to two on that one. So that's pretty crazy. You know, I'm just poking around a few things here. Yeah.
And it ends just like that. Apparently saying a little bit too much about Elon Musk and Starlink and Twitter, or maybe John's shady territory around the satellite world of the wilds of Florida finally caught up with him. But in any event, we lost our connection, and we pretty much had wrapped up the story. Want to thank you, as always, for following along with our ramblings. It's been another great year around here at the Big Cast.
If you go out to the website, please do, big-fintech.com. There's always a chance to look back at the old episodes. And we'll be back with new ones. We're going to take a couple-week break now, but we'll be back in early January with new content. I believe on the 10th will be the first day that we'll have a new episode out there. Or is it the 9th? Whatever it is, that second Tuesday of the year, we'll have some content, including our good friends John Janklius and Ann Legg joining us for our predictions, as we do every year for 2023 and what we have coming up. If you got some time over the holiday, we're just going through and looking at some of our top performing episodes of the last year. Kind of not too surprising. Crypto stuff's always interesting. I think the single most listened to episode, interestingly enough, was around Lone Star Credit Union and how they took a different approach to bringing crypto to market with the partner bank Social as their back office third-party provider and a self-custody model. Intriguing stuff, and given everything that went on recently at over with all the exchanges, including FTX, and the concern about people getting their money back from the exchanges, I suspect that might be a model that gets a little bit more attention in the coming months. Has its own challenges as well, but always interesting stuff to look at and talk to. Again, my name is Glenn Sarvati. You can track me down on Twitter at 154Advisors, or track me down at the Best Innovation Group website, big-fintech.com, where you'll find all kinds of additional information and the cool things that the Best Innovation Group has going on, including the Digital Town Hall. I'll mention that again, also on a bit of a hiatus for the holidays, but on January 11th, we will continue with our bi-weekly cadence on Wednesday afternoons, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. That is a live hour-long session where we expect people to contribute, not just listen like flies on the wall. You can do that if you want to, but it's a lot more fun if you join into the conversation. So we'll be firing that up again. If you go to the show notes again, we can send you a link so you can join us, but it's cutownhall.com to find out more. Again, thanks so much for all your attention. We'll be back here and hope to see you again in a couple of weeks here on the BigCast.
Check back each week for the latest from the BigCast. Or better yet, we hope you'll consider subscribing for free via Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. Tweet us at BigFintech, email info@big-fintech.com, or visit us at big-fintech.com and click on the Media tab, where you can post a comment or check out our archive of hundreds of past episodes. See you next week.